This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Unwired LA. We're about to speak for a second time on this program with Rich Grimes, who's Executive Vice President and Investment Committee Chair at Wireless Capital Partners here in Los Angeles. Welcome back to Unwired LA.
Nice to be here. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. What we're mainly going to talk about is whether the Mayor Hunt's proposal to lease or get more information about leasing a lot of infrastructure in Los Angeles is going to affect the market that you work with there at Wireless Capital Partners in space for and locations for wireless infrastructure.
Well, I think it presents a great opportunity for both the City of Los Angeles by opening up its infrastructure for siting for wireless deployment, as well as for carriers in alternative site options.
Okay, well, why don't you say just a little bit about Wireless Capital Partners, what it does, and how it fits into the ecology of wireless infrastructure?
Sure, we're about a three-year-old company that's well-funded financial and real estate services firm.
Okay,
specializes in the telecommunication industry.
Right,
and our core focus is either purchasing or acquiring leased assets underlying wireless communication facilities.
Okay, let's go back a little further. Why are these infrastructure assets important or essential in the deployment of cellular and Wi-Fi technologies?
Well, they're the core asset for the delivery of, if you will, the RF signal to the user handset and for communicating applications to the consumer.
So this is essentially places where cell towers go.
That's right.
And who is it? Tell us a little bit about the market. Who are the buyers? Who are the sellers here?
Well, typically you have the individual carriers that are deploying their network and building towers or rooftop antennas with the equipment located either on the roof or inside the building or at the base of a tower.
Those essentially are private property.
On private property, principally.
Right.
Although in utility companies and some quasi-governmental property, right-of-ways, etc., are utilized for that siting. Some, not all, are owned by the carriers or as far as the infrastructure. The leases are typically with private land owners.
So when a company like Sprint or Singular decides it's going to put wireless into an area, they send their engineers out and they look at the topography and the buildings and so on, and they figure this is where we're going to site the towers or the
yes.
transmitters?
Well, what they do is they, based upon their coverage or capacity requirements
right.
For that given area, they issue a search ring that identifies a given area where, with criteria on height and propagation and how, you know, what their RF objectives are,
right.
is they issue that search ring. And that search ring then identifies an area, then they have their site deployment teams, either internal or external, go out and identify candidates that would achieve that RF objective.
Okay, and then they knock on the door, send emails, or call people
right.
up and say, we'd like to use your space.
Correct.
Okay.
And typically what they do is they have master lease agreements with bulk landlords.
Right.
So they have that in their database, so when for their siting possibilities, they'll look at those properties because they already have agreements with them.
Right.
So that kind of speeds the leasing process.
How much of that typically is taken care of that way?
It depends by region.
Right. Here in L.A.?
Not probably 5%.
5%. Okay. So most of the stuff, they're going to have to still go out there and find the people.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then the other piece is that there are tower companies
right.
that have built infrastructure or they represent rooftops
right.
for property owners, of which then the carriers would negotiate with them
okay.
Based upon, you know, number of locations and how many antennas and equipment, et cetera, that they would require.
So those are essentially location brokers. We're, in a sense, specialized
yes.
real estate people.
That's correct.
Okay. And are those the people that Wireless Capital Partners usually deals with?
We deal with typically the private owners,
right.
Landlords, in purchasing the underlying ground lease,
right,
or purchasing the rooftop lease from the landlord.
Okay, so
in
what,
the open market.
All right. So what arrangements are typically made then between the carriers and the landlords or the owners?
Well, each carrier has its targeted rent, but markets, individual markets have their own, you know, where the water level of where rents are.
Right. Could you give us a general idea here, Fairly?
A ballpark is probably, on a national basis,
right,
it's probably somewhere around $1,700 a month with a 3% escalator, annual escalator.
Okay. And is that, is L.A. above the national market?
No, it's, I mean, on a blended basis,
right,
with the four or five different carriers, that's probably pretty true. Naturally, you get into more rural areas, the rents are lower.
Right.
In a typically a higher density area, or where property values are greater, it's
right
on the higher side.
So, do these prices tend to track the regular property values in any particular area?
No. No, they pretty much track its own market,
and
fair market rental rate. And the reason for that is that there are options that carriers have and where they can site their property. It's not like I
right
need to be there or I need to be here.
Right.
They need to be in a general area to achieve that RF objective, and they have some flexibility, and therefore they don't have to be held hostage to where someone is saying, no, you're going to pay me $5,000 or
right
or forget it.
Right.
There are those instances that are so strategic that there is a premium that is worthwhile to be paid. However, certainly if you're paying a premium for something, you're doing the due diligence to see what alternative options you have,
right,
not to be beholden to that price mark.
Okay, is that $1,700, for what time period is that?
Monthly.
Monthly. So on the average then, the people who sign up for these get a contract for to allocate their space for the carrier, $1,700 a month with a 3% annual escalator.
Right.
Okay.
And typical terms are five-year initial terms with 3 or 4 or 5 year options.
Right.
Carriers typically have a termination right.
Right.
Of could be anywhere from 30 to 6 months, 30 days to 6 months.
And are those exercised very frequently? Is there a lot of
yeah,
flux in the market here?
Well, certainly with the two major mergers between AT&T Wireless and Singular,
right,
as well as Nextel and Sprint,
right,
that you know, sites that are co-located, those that where they're within a close proximity of achieving the same RF objectives,
right,
they fall within guidelines that would potentially be subject to decommissioning.
Has that been an important fallout of those two mergers?
It hasn't happened yet, but it's going through that scrutiny. Certainly with the AT&T Wireless Singular merger,
right,
it is ahead of the Nextel Sprint, because Nextel Sprint merger hasn't closed yet, where the AT&T Wireless
right
Singular has. So I'm sure they've red flagged some and identified those that are a part of that.
So it's a little like Oracle buying PeopleSoft and 10,000 people being laid off.
Yes.
You don't need the same transmitters in the
Then there's the dynamic, that's true, and then there's that dynamic on evolving technologies where space is going to be required to enable to accommodate those future technologies. But there's a whole dynamic of criteria that is evaluated whether or not they would decommission and terminate the lease of one site versus keep it.
Okay. So now where does Wireless Capital Partners come in here, and what do you offer these leaseholders?
Well, these are cancelable leases.
Right.
And so they can go away. And what we purchase them is for a period of the lease asset, the financial asset of that lease, for, say, 15 or 20 years.
Right.
And so we assume that risk, where we will pay a lump sum of cash up front to that landlord.
Right.
And we will assume the risk of decommissioning, technology evolution, mergers, etc. And the only reason why we're able to do that is because our portfolio is so large that we can absorb an event. We have reserves set aside in the event that there are decommissioning or termination of leases.
So you essentially become the holder of a whole portfolio of leases.
Correct.
And your expectation is that on average you'll get to keep most of them.
Right.
And so that in the long run you'll come out ahead.
Right. And the only way that you're able to do that is by size.
Right. Okay.
Because you need to have it. I mean, we have well over 1,000 leases, and you have to be at that size portfolio for
right.
it to make sense.
Okay. Now, is this a pretty much, has the market been saturated? Are there a lot more leases coming online moving forward, or is it kind of a static situation now?
No, there's probably nationally, I'd say close to 10,000 plus or minus new leases, wireless leases this year.
So wireless is continuing to... Is this because more cells have to be put into existing coverage areas because of more traffic?
Yes. There's a few reasons. One is that coverage isn't ubiquitous in every area.
Right.
So that's a challenge.
Right.
That's from a coverage standpoint. On a capacity standpoint, as more users are using their phones in a given area,
right.
it requires a greater site density
right.
to be able to support that capacity. In addition, the deployment of a lot of these applications that are data driven,
right.
Uses up a lot more capacity.
Meaning more sending photos or video.
Right.
It takes up more bandwidth.
That's it.
And requires more cells or more
correct.
Transponders.
That's correct.
On the human level, how aware are the landlords here, the people who you deal with, about the current market values of their properties? Do they have an association? Is there a sort of stock exchange place where they look for information on what the market's doing and so on?
Well, I think they all have different sources for that, but what we've found that because we're pretty well known nationally in the marketplace that we get called quite a bit as far as getting evaluations of what property value would be as it relates to a siting of a lease.
Right.
That's on the one hand. Also, we've been retained by major carriers to provide them with what is the fair market rental rate.
Right.
And do those studies for them across the country. So we've been a source of that, but there isn't. I think every landlord has in his own mind what he thinks the value of his property is.
Right.
And if he has tenants that are already paying rent based on square footage, he can back into what would be a rental rate that would support that. However, as I alluded to before, the carrier has options as to where it would site, and
right.
they have a targeted market rent that they have to achieve
right.
or are driven towards. So usually that the water level gets pretty close to that mark.
Okay. Do most of the people who have these leases want to sell them to you, or are there counter arguments that would convince them that they ought to keep it themselves and take the risk themselves of being terminated?
Well, it's varied, but I'd say that that they're based upon our experience in the last couple of years and certainly the last year is that it's a very attractive offer to the landlord, because if you look at it, they can't take that lease and go to their bank and borrow against it.
Why is that?
Because it's a cancelable lease.
Okay.
So there's no security in that lease.
Right.
Whereas they could take a lump sum of cash up front,
right.
and they could go buy a piece of property and have it be income producing
right.
at a greater level than with greater certainty over the future.
So essentially, by aggregating all of this risk, you've created some collateral that didn't exist before.
Yes, we pretty much have defined an asset class that was previously not classified.
Okay. Now we've essentially been talking about cellular transceivers.
Right.
Because Wi-Fi is, how does Wi-Fi then enter into this picture, or other wireless internet technologies?
Well, you need to deploy the signal, and to do that, utilizing infrastructure that will provide that.
Right.
And typically, a carrier or any type of person who's trying to deploy it is going to utilize infrastructure that already exists for benefits of ease of lease negotiation, familiarity of that landlord, understanding the dynamics of that type of a lease. Two is the zoning. Knowing that there's already sites there that you can achieve zoning, and therefore you won't have to spend a lot of soft cost and money in developing the site, and then all turn around and be turned down by the city for not being able to have a permit to be there.
Right.
So that has significant value. For the Wi-Fi deployment, that's much more localized. They'll utilize existing wireless infrastructure, but typically it's because of the propagation is within 150 feet,
right,
that your base station, your centralized equipment and access points, your antennas,
right,
are so in a deployed in a very close area.
Right. So inside of a Starbucks or a bookstore or something.
Right.
So they're really the users of those base stations are the landlords of those properties themselves. So it's really not a public issue so far with Wi-Fi.
That's correct, and it's unlicensed spectrum. So
right,
the landlord or the owner of that area controls
right
that spectrum.
Okay. Now, however, this is with Wi-Fi, but there are other wireless internet technologies,
yeah,
principally WiMAX and pre-WiMAX technologies, fixed wireless, that come in between here. They're not cellular,
mm-hmm,
and they're not within a premise. What's the expectation there? Are you getting into that market now yourself, Wireless Capital Partners, to find WiMAX or pre-WiMAX sites? For more public transceiving positioning?
Yeah, I WiMAX, the technology is, you know, not really sure. It's a couple of years, you know, offshore as far as the deployment of that.
Right.
And so where that will be deployed because of its propagation is, you know, 30 miles. You know, that
right
in many cases is dictated by the amount of usage and capacity that requires. But
right,
that would probably result in having it deployed on existing infrastructure.
On existing cellular infrastructure?
Yeah, sure. If there's space and there's the structural integrity of a tower can support that, or if there's enough room on a rooftop to support additional antennas for that.
Okay, and so how would those those WiMAX carriers,
mm-hmm,
relate to the existing cellular people? Would they have to negotiate separate new contracts with those landlords, or what would they do exactly?
Well, it would depend. If the site lease allowed the permitted use for additional equipment, antennas, coax, etc.,
right,
then it would not be an event that would result in an amendment or additional rent. However,
right,
if the site cannot accommodate it due to the footprint, can't support additional equipment, then that would result in an amendment or a consent from the landlord to expand that permitted use, and therefore an amendment and additional rent.
So if a landlord is leasing space to a cellular carrier,
mm-hmm,
and a WiMAX carrier who's a different company wants to come in,
mm-hmm,
what's the typical arrangement in the lease with the cellular carrier that would perhaps prohibit the a competitive technology from also using that space?
Well, greed is a wonderful thing. So the prohibition of doing that, if a carrier can subsidize its cost, fixed cost at a site, it will do that if it can accommodate that based upon, you know, space and structural load.
Meaning that the landlords have the right to add a new WiMAX or
No, not the landlord. Let's say if it's a tower.
Right.
And the carrier has leased that space.
Oh, I see what you're saying. If the cellular carriers want to add Wi-Fi to their space and it's the structure can bear the weight,
right.
then that's written in. In other words, their deal with the landlord is to put a transceiver there, and if they want to put a cellular one or a WiMAX one, that's up to them.
Right. Typically, either the carrier has total control as to what additional loading of its own antennas,
right.
and technology, or third party,
right?
Or they have a lease, a ground lease, a compound lease with the landlord that also provides revenue sharing between the carrier and the landlord for any additional loading.
So
it could be either or, depending upon what was negotiated in that given transaction.
So in other words, they'd either be able to add WiMAX at no cost to them or at some cost to them.
Correct.
But that would be up to them.
At some, predetermined percentage or dollar amount of revenue sharing for additional tenants that would go on that structure.
Okay, now does that mean that if all the best locations are owned or the leases are owned by the carriers, if a competitive WiMAX provider wants to come in and the cellular carrier doesn't want to give them space and undercut their own business, perhaps, they don't have to?
Well, I don't think they would, because that's a great point, because it certainly was the mentality years ago where if, let's say, an AT&T wireless had a tower,
right.
and someone else wanted to site there, they'd say forget it.
Right.
They wanted to completely control it.
Right.
Then I think it became much more realistic, probably partly driven by zoning as well, is they saw it as a great opportunity for subsidizing their fixed cost, and so they opened up their infrastructure for co-location of other carriers or other parties, whoever would pay them rent.
To use their existing equipment, or
yes, to use their existing tower,
right?
Not radios, or
not radios or antennas,
no,
but space,
but physical space,
right?
Correct. And so that pendulum has swung in opening up the infrastructure,
right.
for siting where you can. Now, a lot of times the compound of, let's say, where there's a tower, will only accommodate X number of equipment,
right.
and carriers. So
right.
what happens is that a WiMAX or a Wi-Fi, if in this example, would pay rent to that carrier to have antennas placed on that tower.
Right.
But they would have to pay rent to the landlord because they'd have to secure additional ground space
right.
to support their equipment.
Okay. Now, based on what you said earlier, that in some cases there are other places that the carriers don't have to, they're not over a barrel with any particular landlord because they can go somewhere else within the general area.
Yes.
Does that now also apply with the coming of WiMAX and other broadband internet wireless technologies, or is there only one high piece of ground in an area, and whoever's got that is going to be able to charge a premium because it's at because there's a limited amount of space available?
Right. There are those locations. They're probably somewhat limited if you're to look at the totality of siting options and where they need to be.
Right.
There is flexibility in how they want to, deploy their signal.
Right.
And so there are a lot of options that they can do that. And one of the options is utilizing right away and infrastructure of the city, much of which, the Bureau of Street Lighting and the City of Los Angeles are trying to do.
Okay, well let's move into that then. I want to thank you. You've given a pretty good picture here of what the existing situation is in this area. Now comes Mayor Hahn to say that the City of Los Angeles may want to make available tens of thousands of new locations on its own infrastructure.
Right.
Now, how is that going to impact the dynamic? Will it impact the dynamic or the prices or the situation here should the city end up doing this?
Well, I think it's the right thing to do, and it's a powerful thing. It has a great option to the carriers, as well as an opportunity for the city to derive revenue from its infrastructure that's, you know, otherwise wouldn't be utilized.
If the city leases thousands of these sites, mm-hmm. are you going to go to the city and say you'd like to buy up those leases as well and give them a lump sum so
sure.
they can put it into police or
yeah.
something else?
Well, we've done that with other municipalities. You know, we expect that to be, you know, a request for a proposal process, and we'd be happy to compete for that opportunity.
That's a real public-private partnership, then.
Yes, yes. But in one of the things that how the press releases that didn't come out of Mayor's office, how it was reported,
right.
really was very confusing. Even reading the articles, they just completely missed it.
What was the confusion about?
Well, I think what the perception was and what was written is that the city is going to deploy a network and then answer the solutions for the coverage problems in throughout the city of LA.
Right.
And they're not the ones that are going to be doing that. It's going to be the carriers.
Right.
What the city is doing is offering up its infrastructure, marketing its infrastructure to the carriers.
Right.
For deployment of their network to provide coverage possibly where otherwise they couldn't because the ability to site or deploy was limited or not available otherwise.
Right. The city's not getting into the cellular business.
Not
city,
at all.
The city is getting into the landlord business.
That's right.
Of leasing these sites to private carriers who will then deploy them as they see fit to fill in gaps or expand the service.
That's right. They're just leveraging their infrastructure. And what's going to depend upon whether or not and how successful it is going to be on a basis of probably three or four items, and one of those being the lease rate, because once again, carriers have options in how they deploy their network,
right?
And if any city says, well, I want X number of dollars for a site,
right?
Because we want to maximize the revenue,
right.
That's not the way to look at it. The way to look at it is that you'll do well if you drive volume.
Right.
And that's the only way that it's going to work. The one-offs is just not worth bothering with. So if you want to drive volume, you have to have a very competitive pricing. That's one. Two is the lease document.
Right.
You know, the typically the city attorneys have to protect their interests, and there are certain things that are DEFCON 4 that they have to have, otherwise they can't allow anyone to site on their infrastructure. However, there are some concerns that the carriers have that they won't site unless they have agreement in certain areas. So there has to be a carrier-friendly document that addresses the concerns of the city.
Okay.
And then thirdly is the zoning. In order to make it attractive, if you have the document, if you have a competitive lease rate, it's speed to market in the eyes of the carrier. That is the key, speed to market. And to achieve that, if the city has the power to be able to say, okay, look, within this design criteria, if you site on our infrastructure and it's stealth and treated based upon these guidelines, we'll allow you by right to be there.
You won't have to go through a permitting process that could take so long as to make the whole deal untenable.
Right. And if you and by doing that, now you become more than competitive to other property owners, because they have allowed by right zoned areas, but they typically have to go through some type of conditional use process.
Right.
Certainly in the city of Los Angeles.
Now, is this an example of when Verizon fought municipal broadband rollout in Philadelphia, it argued that the public sector, which has all kinds of inherent advantages, ought not to be allowed to compete with the private sector.
Right.
They meant in the provision of telecommunication services. In this case, in the provision of leasing space.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the same thing, or is there a fundamental difference here? Is this the government, which has the right to permit itself, competing unfairly with the private sector that has to go to the government to get permitted?
Yeah, well, I think in the case of Philadelphia, they now, say that what they did is facilitate the process,
right.
To make sure that it was, the design criteria and the needs of the city were met,
right.
And then they had no intent of being an operator, and they turned that over to Verizon to be the operator, based upon, you know, a selection process.
Have they, did they?
Yeah, they did.
When did they do that?
To my knowledge. I heard it was reported probably a couple months ago.
Oh, because I interviewed the CIO of Philadelphia 2 days ago, and
Verizon's the operator.
Right, but, well, Verizon was signed a waiver with the city of Philadelphia saying that it wouldn't exercise its rights under HB 30 to preempt the service in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they're not going to preempt the service, but the network operator is Verizon. I think the problem there is that Verizon was, as I understand it, was threatening lawsuit or going to the FCC.
Well, actually, they went to the government in Harrisburg and got a law passed, HB 30, that said that cities can't offer broadband service.
Yeah,
that's what they did. But they ended up exempting Philadelphia and any city in Pennsylvania that has a customer by January 2006 from those provisions. But on the larger sort of philosophical, economic, political issue of whether this is unfair competition from the city against the private landlords, is there anything to that?
No, I don't think so. I think we're looking here is the city is looking to deploy to provide its infrastructure for the benefit of revenue generation,
right?
And as a benefit to deploy service in those areas that are digital divide, where residents that can't achieve it.
Right.
So by achieving that holistic objective, there are huge opportunities for city services, public safety, etc.
Right.
To run on a network that is deployed at the same time, where while it's being built out to accommodate
right.
the needs of the city for city services, which then it is deployed at a greater efficiency and essentially is underwritten by the more commercial side.
Right. Well, on that subject of whether this is a good way to bridge the digital divide, do you think that this is a sufficient impetus? In other words, let's take just a generic underserved area where the people don't have a lot of computers and don't have a lot of broadband that they're using. Is the city planning on subsidizing the service within those areas by making even lower cost leases than the open market would generate, that people would be carriers will be encouraged to go into underserved areas and serve them?
Well, it's a very good thought and perspective, and I think that's something that we're focused on as far as chairing the business model committee for the mayor's executive panel. That's what I'm looking at.
Oh, okay.
And that you, on the one hand, by opening up the infrastructure, is not going to provide deployment in areas where the carriers can't make money.
Right.
That's not going to happen. However, if you provide an incentive of deployment that isn't so much of needing to put a site in an area of need, but it may be adding sectors or additional antennas that will be able to reach that area that isn't currently aimed into that residential area or that targeted area.
Right.
And by providing incentives that may could be rental abatements on other infrastructure of where the carriers do see revenue generating opportunities, rental abatement or some type of economic trade there.
So I think that
will facilitate the incentive that the city's trying to seek.
So essentially, the city would say, "We'll lease you the space in the areas that are already overcrowded and where you're in traffic and radio traffic, and you need more transceivers. If you'll agree to put these in places that your own economic plan wouldn't have otherwise told you to do so,
right.
And if you make it available in those areas,
right? That's correct. And one thing you have to be mindful of is that there, if you look at it in terms of overlapping umbrellas,
right.
And different technologies are going to achieve those that reach
right.
to those areas, and when you have frequencies of 850 that propagate a long ways, 1900
right.
not as great.
Right.
you have a dynamic of a honeycomb effect, if you will,
right,
that provides service and doesn't provide service in coveraged areas depending upon where those sites are and the technologies that are, and the spectrum that's being deployed, and it's evolving. So
right.
So it may not be able to serve a certain area today, but a technology in 2 or 3 years may very well be able to achieve that.
Okay. Speaking of the technology and its evolution, I think there was some reference to this. Maybe you know more about it. My picture of cellular sites is that they have these are pretty large pieces of equipment that do this. But and a light post, however tens of thousands of them there are, couldn't really support something like that. But as we all know, the tendency in electronic equipment is to smaller, better, faster, more powerful, and less space. Are there systems on the horizon or existing already that could be deployed on a lamppost that are so small that you could barely see them, that could have in some kind of mesh network or otherwise that would allow coverage of either cellular or Wi-Fi or WiMAX or pre-WiMAX to be distributed more easily with smaller transceivers in more locations?
Absolutely, and it's happening today. I mean, distributed antenna systems that are essentially, if you look at a backbone of fiber with that would branches out of access points or antennas,
right,
exist right now in many major airports throughout the United States, in office campuses,
So essentially, all you have to put on the lamppost is an antenna.
Right. The easy way to look at it is that there's a ratio benefit in that you have one base station of equipment and one antenna and then the antennas are on a tower.
Right.
Right. With a distributed antenna system, you have one base station or hotel, if you will, of radio equipment.
Right.
And then you have stringed fiber connecting the access points of the antennas on the street light overhang,
right,
that are strung down the street or through canyons. There's 182, there's probably 250, but of microcells or distributed antenna systems in the Hollywood Hills.
Right.
That provide service, because it's the only way you can do that is by, you don't have a lot of capacity in a given area because of the topography dictates that
you
can't see very far because
right,
it's going to hit the mountain.
Right.
So it's very localized, and so you don't need, one big site is not going to do it.
You need a lot of little sites.
You have to have little sites. Now, you could have one site that would be, you know, a 400-foot tower that would that planes would have to avoid,
right,
shooting down and providing, you know, capacity and coverage in those hard-to-place canyon areas, but that's not realistic. And utilizing joint pole committee where you utility poles and stringing microcells, that's one way. Another way, when you get in the densely populated area of cities, where light standards are and in residential areas, distributed antenna systems are ideal. And the efficiency is that you're able to have one base station or one hotel, maybe a ratio of up to 8 or 9 to 1.
Now, there's something called broadband over power line. Internet
right,
signals can be distributed through that.
Yes.
There's been we've got another website here actually called Broadband Over Power Line World that covers that.
Right.
There's been a lot of complaints from ham radio operators that it interferes with their work.
Mm-hmm.
But I would guess that the electric light poles are connected to electricity somewhere along the line, and possibly by underground cables, aren't they?
Yes. Well, yeah, they're fiber fed. And typically, the core of the pole
right,
has fiber running in it.
Optical fiber, you mean?
Yes. Yeah, it has coax.
Right. Coax.
Yeah, running through coax or fiber.
Right.
And it runs through the core of that lamppost, if you will.
So, in other words, the lamppost is antenna ready already.
Well, some are, some aren't.
Right.
I mean, some may need to be either replaced. But most of them, I won't say most, but many of them have enough of a diameter
right,
to support the fiber that would need to be fed to the access point.
Right.
The ground.
So what you're saying essentially is that many are already almost ready, and most could be made ready to become access points, and they're already spaced so close together to give light to the whole area, they could essentially deliver wireless communications as well.
Yes, and you may not need to go one for one,
right?
Based on the topography and the propagation of the signal and capacity and all that, you may string it over every other four,
right? Exactly,
or three or whatever, depending upon the area.
All right. So with this exciting revelation of the technological readiness of the system, is there an economic model that you think is going to drive this further deployment using these locations?
Well, I believe there is. I mean, having been in that area of focus for a major carrier for many years,
right.
I know what would be. You need to have it be compelling. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen.
Right.
But you at least need to be able to have the right dress on to go to the dance.
Right. Okay. Well, switch your hats. I was going to use another clothing metaphor. Switch hats a little bit.
Right.
And become a member of the Wi-Fi and Beyond Los Angeles Executive Broadband Panel.
Okay.
What's the view over there about this proposal to lease more infrastructure, and how is that going to affect the work of the panel and its final report?
Well, I think it's consistent, and it will be very much aligned. The Georgiana Streeter and the Office of Management and Budget has been very solicitous, and through the moderation of Morley Winograd to ensure that any business model that is developed is consistent with what the city is doing with respect to an RFP relating to its point of its infrastructure.
Right. So you're essentially assuming that some version of this of the proposal for making the infrastructure available will be implemented, and that you can count on that for in your recommendations.
Yes, we are consulting with each other. To ensure that we're aligned, and that I would think that the mayor would expect that alignment, and that is what's going on.
So what's the timing now? Let's just sort of wrap up by focusing on the timing for the RFI for the infrastructure and for the broadband panel. What's the timetable going forward now?
The RFI is in due back in a couple weeks.
Right.
I don't have the exact date off the top of my head. But
right.
So that's a request for information.
Right, about the end of February or so.
Right. And then there'll be the issuance, the preparation from that data will be gathered.
Right.
It will then be incorporated in a request for a proposal.
Right.
That will be issued by the Office of Management and Budget in conjunction with ITA, of the city,
right.
And send out an RFP. And then
okay.
That process is typically you allow 4 to 6 weeks for response.
Okay.
And then you have there's an iterative process of
sometime in mid-April or so carriers should be able to start bidding on this on the space.
Responding to the RFP. It may be carriers. It may be a neutral player. I'll be the neutral host to this and handle all the operations and maintenance.
Could one of the players be neighborhood councils? Could neighborhood councils? No.
No. No.
Because
they don't have the expertise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you need someone who has the telecom expertise for project management, construction,
right.
Operations, maintenance.
So do you expect
outages.
Okay, so do you mainly expect then that the major cellular and with the addition of some additional players will be the people who will be responding to the RFP and leasing this space?
Yeah, I see those that are neutral host players, carriers, maybe some equipment providers that provide technology solutions and that also have neutral host provider experience.
Be more specific. What are these neutral hosts? What kind of thing is that?
They are companies that are they're integrators.
Right.
And so essentially they respond to the RFP.
Right.
And the RFP is, unless they have pre-commitment, is the economics is based upon, you know, commitments of leases or from the carriers.
Right.
And then what they do is they manage the negotiations of the lease. They manage the deployment of the construction process,
right.
The coordination with the city and what its concerns and issues are and its service level agreements, and then oversee the construction management or the deployment of that network in that given area, and then finally, on an operation and maintenance management standpoint going forward, they provide that service for a fee that is proportionally paid by the users that are using that system.
So do those entities end up becoming WISPs, wireless internet service providers,
No, they aren't operators.
They're not operators.
The neutral hosts are neutral in that they are not operators. There are neutral host players that now are branding, if you will, their
right.
own their own name as a network operator. And
right. So they essentially have two departments. They have one that is a neutral provider, and then they also become the WISP operator.
Yeah, they resell.
They resell to themselves or to somebody. So
correct.
Then someone else comes in and then says, we'll take advantage of the infrastructure that you've created.
Right.
Can multiple operators work off the same infrastructure?
Sure, sure. I mean, as long as your design criteria and your technology
right.
is interoperable and compatible
right.
with what is would be, you know, across the board. And essentially what you're looking at is, you know, as long as the fiber is and the antennas can handle GSM and CDMA technology,
right.
Typically Wi-Fi would require a separate, distinct antenna
right.
or access point, and so would WiMAX.
Right.
Although that's today, although certainly they're trying to evolve it to a point where there's a, quote, smart antenna, as
right.
they call it,
right.
that will be able to handle, you know, multiple frequencies and multiple technologies.
Right. So it could do CDMA and WiMAX or
CDMA, GSM, right. WiMAX, Wi-Fi. You know.
And then the different carriers who want to provide those different services could use the same infrastructure.
Correct.
Okay. And where will Wireless Capital Partners be in that process?
Well, I mean, we would love to have the opportunity to bid on those. Leased assets and provide capital to the city and assume the risk of any future deployment changes or non-renewal of leases or decommissioning over time.
Okay. That's your business.
That's our business.
Okay. I want to thank you for sharing all this information with us. And moving forward, let's talk again in a few months and see where things have gone by then.
Appreciate it, Mark. And comment from myself and many others. You provide a great service, and keep it up.
Thank you. And once we've got this network in place, it'll be even easier for people to get access to
That's
all this
right.
information. Okay. Thanks very much.
All right.
Talk
Take
to you
care.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.